Well, Jesse, we are honored to have you here. And folks, the old adage is, you don't know where you're going until you know where you've been. And the history of old-time music, of bluegrass music, of early jazz, and all those different kinds of great music that make America what it is, are closely tied into what legends like this man are doing. And I want to start asking some questions about his family background and some very important things. There was a happening that an innovator in the record business way back when, called Ralph Peer, was working for what became the Recording Company of America, RCA Records. But he went down south and found out that there was a market for this old-time music coming out of the hills, and he put out ads for people to come in to Bristol, Tennessee, and audition for sessions. What happened at those sessions in 1927 are called by most historians the Big Bang of country music. And that's because you had Jimmy Rogers, the granddaddy of country music, show up there. You had the Carter family show up there. You had so many of the greats who became legends in what is now known as early country or bluegrass or old-time music. And amongst those people was somebody very important to you, I would say. Jesse's grandfather played with an outfit. Was that the Bull Mountain Moonshiners?
Yeah.
Did they ever get caught?
No, it was pretty sick.
Rolling down Thunder Road or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your grandfather's name?
Charles.
And what did he play?
He played fiddle.
What was his style like?
His style?
Yeah.
It's just old-time fiddle player.
Old-time fiddle player. And was he from Southwest Virginia or Tennessee or where?
He is from Southwest Virginia, yeah. Yeah. Well, we grew up in the same community there. Back in the mountains between it's a little neck of Virginia that's between Tennessee and Kentucky. So it was pretty easy. If you got after you go across the state line, you could get away with anything. Sometimes.
Well, it's an interesting thing because now, how far away were Ralph and Carter Stanley born from you?
About 8 miles.
And you think about that same region there. They call that the Fertile Crescent of country music. It'll run you from the Piedmont of South Carolina up through into southern West Virginia. And his family was closely involved with the historic recording sessions there. Were there other musicians in your family that were,
they all played. They didn't play professionally. I think some uncles played with my grandfather, but he passed away pretty early. But more that played with him on the Bristol sessions. But I had all my uncles were into fiddle playing, and when I started out, that's what I wanted to do. I started playing fiddle and started whistling at me too much. I started playing mandolin.
Speaking of the mandolin, now, a big step in this man's musical world that made a change in the way we think and feel about what we now call bluegrass music was when Jim and Jesse, the McReynolds brothers, got together. When did you start first playing out in public?
It was about we first started on radio really in 1947. That was a local radio station opened up in Norton, Virginia, which is about 8 or 10 miles from our home. And so I got to know, I had Jim was in the service at that time. And I got with one of my neighbors and his father went and bought 15 minutes on this radio station for just me and him. I played electric guitar. He had to furnish the guitar for me. I couldn't afford one, but I started out playing electric guitar with him, and we had just two people, and did a 15-minute radio show every day, sponsored by his little restaurant. And, we called them beer joints back then. But
what sort of material would you play on the electric guitar?
I played sort of like Ernest Tubb.
Leon Rhodes and that sort of thing.
Not Leon, it was full Leon. What was the early one?
Billy Bird, take it away, Billy Bird, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just played simple stuff like that. And I just, it took me a while to learn that I wouldn't be a guitar player. And when Jim got out of the Army, he bought a mandolin. And I picked up the mandolin and he picked up the guitar. We did a few things, not recording, but with me playing mandolin. But he just wasn't interested in playing that much lead. He was more business than he was a musician. He wanted to be, and somebody had to do that. Anyway, I took the mandolin and we just traded. He started playing guitar, and that's the way it turned out. So I started doing all this strange stuff, and he said, "I don't know what you're trying to do, but it don't sound right." But here I am, 60 some years later.
If you talk to the various mandolin players in the bluegrass world or beyond it, you talk to someone like Ronnie McCurry, who is as good a player as you're ever going to hear anywhere, and he says to me things like, "Old Jesse, he's a hoss, he's a monster." He says, that man is constantly practicing, constantly pushing himself with new ideas, and just doesn't quit with them. There's so many new ideas, and Jim probably got tired of them, didn't he?
Yeah.
But all the things that Jim and Jesse managed to accomplish, and some of the great musicians that they had in their band over the years. For example, there was a country singer who got famous, but before he got famous, he played fiddle in your band. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That would be Sonny James.
Yes.
And great players like Bobby Thompson played the banjo with them. Vassar Clements played fiddle with them. Later on, Jimmy Buchanan. Buddy Griffin played with them. There are all kinds of great, great musicians over the years that helped define what we now call bluegrass music. And you also played some sort of old-time fiddle updated into your own style.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. I did one fiddle album. In fact, between fiddle players in our band sometimes, I would be the fiddle player. I'd do some low-down fiddle playing. I learned well enough to do one album, and it's amazing that the fiddle players now that tell me that they learned from my album, me and my fiddles. It was called, I played harmony with myself, so I call it fiddles instead of just me and my fiddle.
Well, speaking of the harmony fiddle plan, just about everybody out there who knows how to play bluegrass enough to be in a jam would know how to play a tune called Dixie Hoedown. And this man wrote it way, way, way back. When did you write that?
I wrote that back in about 61, I guess.
Now, on the recording, is that you and Vassar?
Yeah.
And Vassar Clements, the great Vassar Clements, and who played the harmony melody and what?
I played the harmony. He played.
Okay, and he played the melody on it.
Strange thing, me and Vassar lived, he worked in our band, and we lived in a trailer park about 50 feet apart. And I'd get up, go down to his, he lived in a little house right beside my trailer, and I'd get up at noontime, go down there, and Vassar would be sitting there playing his fiddle with his pajamas on. So. He'd play all day, and I'd go down and join him, and so I wrote this tune, and the first recording session we did with Vassar, I had a hard time finding a fiddle, so I found one that somebody gave to me, and then I had to get it put together, the top put on it, and extra pieces glued in it, and for the soundpost in my fiddle, the one I played on Dixie Hoedown, I had a 20-pin nail.
Well,
it's amazing what a good sound.
I gotta say, on the recording, you did nail it. So,
good.
Well, there are so many aspects of this man's career that we'd want to cover, and I just want to move on to some of them. Two aspects that I think made Jim and Jesse so interesting and made them unique were his style of mandolin playing, which nobody else was doing, and their vocal style. And if you go back, and they were very adventurous in finding different kinds of songs to sing. They broke a lot of barriers musically, and One thing that I just loved about your sound was just Jim's tenor over your lead voice. It was so smooth and so tight and very clean and emotional at the same time. Whose vocal styles were you listening to when you brought your voice?
Well, we listened to the Delmore Brothers and the Blue Sky Boys and Manners Mountaineers. I guess we set our style between the Delmore Brothers and the Blue Sky Boys. Of course, we had records of Bill and Charlie at the Monroe Brothers at that time, and we learned, that's who we learned from. And Jim sort of developed his own style of tenor singing. I'd try to get him to sing like Bill Monroe or Ira Leuven or something, and he said, I'll just do it my way. And if it didn't feel comfortable to him, he wouldn't do it. And if he had
good for him.
If I had an extra chord I wanted to put in a tune, well, he'd just leave it out.
You know what? That's called old time music.
So he, I always told Jim, I said, whenever you die, I think we'll put it on your tombstone. Here's a man who used about 10% of his potential. Because he's just so relaxed, and he never really got excited about anything. And, I mean, if his house would catch on fire, he'd say, well, that shouldn't have happened. I reckon I should call the fire department.
I gotta say that the one time I remember Jim getting really excited was down here in the Catskills at the Pines Resort. Little Roy Lewis was just deviling you guys to death, driving you two just crazy, running around in between you, crawling on his hands and knees, and he dropped his picks, and he's going, I dropped my pick, and he ran around under your knees and then under Jim's, and Jim McReynolds, you know, the man with the perfect hair, these both guys had perfect hair, and they were right in place, sat right on top of Little Roy Lewis. It was the most beautiful moment I ever saw.
Yeah, Little Roy could get more out of Jim than anybody could, I guess.
Just thank you.
He came to me one day, he said, do you think Jim would get mad if I mess his howl up? I said, well, no, he likes you. You can do anything you want to do.
The things siblings will do to each other. So tell me, when did you first hear the Leuven Brothers?
I guess first I heard them was, when I stopped dreaming. And, well, the first one they had was Alabama, the first recording they had. We learned a lot of their tune because we all started out about the same time. Incidentally, when I went to Korea in 1953, I met Charlie in Korea. So me and Charlie got together over there and started singing together. Both of us were lead singers, so we sung, I guess, at quite a few of the places. And Jim always joked about that. He said, Jess and Charlie started singing in Korea and they signed the truce pretty quick. But that was the older weapon. At least we got it ended over there.
Well, with the vocal style, you two did a tribute to the Leuven Brothers. And that is one of my favorite recordings on the planet. Nobody who loves old-time country music or bluegrass can ignore the enormous talent and writing of the Leuven Brothers, but you guys had your own take on it. And I dearly loved, you know, Jim could stand there and hit these high notes that would just be hair-raising, but not a hair would move.
Yeah. He had a way of taking care of it.
Yeah, he did. Their vocal style, I would say Jim and Jesse's vocal style was a little bit more smooth and polished than the hardcore mountain sound that would be equated with like the Stanleys who lived 8 miles away from them. Moving on to the instrumental makeup. Now you guys started out with a mandolin and a guitar, and you had probably heard, well, of course the Delmores often had a, a, a regular guitar and a tenor guitar, and the Blues Guys had the mandolin and the guitar, and Bill and Charlie Monroe had the mandolin and the guitar. And what mandolin players were you listening to for your early ideas?
Well, I was listening to Bill Monroe, and Red Richter had made a big impression on me. He worked with Carl Story in Knoxville, and they had a radio show every day on WNOX called the Midday Merry-Go-Round, and Red was the mandolin player for Carl Story, and he was a great mandolin player, and he.
Did you know a guy named Jesse Easterday, or
was that?
Was it Jesse Easterday or something like that? Played the mandolin in that area. Norman Blake had told me there was a guy playing on Cass Walker's show.
Well,
early mandolin.
There was, I think Paul Busker.
Paul Busker, yeah, I've heard
I think
him
he
talk
was,
about
it. He worked there a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you tell the folks how it happened, play a little bit of what makes we're going to get these. I'm going to get off this stage soon, and we're going to get these guys to play music. See, now look at that. How do I get a hand? Sometimes people will clap for you when they know you're going to leave. Can you give just a little example of that kind of roll thing that you do?
Since you mentioned the first record we did, I played this. Someone named it Cross Pick, and I didn't call it. I didn't know what to call it because Jim called it everything. Anyway, this first when we did the first record, but we was looking for a fiddle player to play on the session. We found Sonny James had just signed with Capitol Records, same time we had, and Fire and Young, and so we got Sonny to play fiddle on the first record, and I played this mandolin style on it, and in spite of what Jim thought about it, everybody really complimented me on it, so we did a little bit of arguments with me.
Now, where did you get the idea for doing this kind of mandolin play?
Actually, I heard Earl Scruggs. I didn't know how Earl played. I just heard him on the radio. We had a man work with us who was Snuffy Jenkins' nephew, Hope Jenkins. And we worked in his band. He played banjo. In fact, he played banjo on this tune. And the only way he could play was backwards. The backwards banjo players, you know what I'm talking about. There's a forward roll and there's a backwards roll. And he could not play the forward roll, and I didn't know the difference. Buddy could.
I'm gonna bug out of here in a second so that Buddy Griffin can take his rightful place.
Anyway, I learned to play the backward roll on the mandolin. So.
And I just want to say before I get off the stage that we have only touched on the things this man has accomplished. He's also a great guitar player. He did a guitar album that I really loved. And just all the things, they've broken so many barriers over the years, and they were perfect gentlemen about it, at least to us. They might have been brothers, but they were perfect gentlemen about it, and they set standards of professionalism that we all still admire today. And he went on to do things like he played mandolin on an album by the rock band The Doors. He did all kinds of things. So we have just touched on him, but there's nothing more important than hearing what he can do actually himself. So as I take my exit, I want to introduce the shy, quiet country boy that is from my home state of West Virginia, and I used to play some music. He played on my first LP, Mr. Buddy Griffin.
You got your mic, buddy. You can say what you want.
I got the mic. Hey, John. After he does this, I want you to ask him about the split string picking. So you come back up and take this over again.
No.
After this.
No, let Jesse play. I'd like to introduce
my grandson who sings tenor with me. He's close to Jim singing. I know you can't replace someone like Jim. That's the reason. After he passed away, I went in different directions, and and I'm still going in different directions, going around in circles sometimes, I think, but I end up back to where I started. And this is Garrett McReynolds, my grandson. And on the fiddle over there is a guy who played with me when he was 15 or 16 years old. He's one of the young fiddle players I picked up around from Roanoke, Virginia. And since then, he has played with a lot of people, like the superstars in Nashville, and now he's my record producer. And he produced the last album, really, the couple of them, the Grateful Dead project I did, and I got a brand new album. We went the opposite direction on it. I did 12 wedding songs. So we have a wedding venue. We do weddings every week in my place down in Tennessee there. So
I'll keep that in mind.
We don't do divorces. And man, I know these folks want to hear some music, so let's play like that. See you, Thomas, over here.